Good morning, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, September 7, 2014. My name is Leah, and I'm your moderator. The share ID for Friday, September 5th, is 6819. 6819. This morning, A Vision for You presents The Stream of Life. Living in Steps 10, 11, and 12. By completing Steps 1 through 9, we have been transformed. When we finish Step 9, we experience the promises. We have recovered. The channel of grace in us is cleared. The sunlight of the Spirit deep down inside us is allowed to shine up and through us. We are restored to sanity. The problem has been removed. The only requirement is that we stay in fit spiritual condition. Steps 10, 11, and 12 are designed to help us continue our spiritual growth. Here to speak this morning on the Stream of Life is Terry H. Terry is a recovered compulsive overeater from Maine who is dedicated to helping others and carrying this message of recovery. And welcome to A Vision for You, Terry.
Good morning. My name is Terry. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. And I'm so grateful to be here on the line with you this morning. I would like to share with you a little bit about my story before I get into the Stream of Life, living in 10, 11, and 12. And I'd like to just kind of share with you my last binge. My first bottom, I got to OA in 2000. That was my first bottom. I had no idea that I had a problem and that I had a twofold disease. I came into program, I was given a food plan, a sponsor. I found a sponsor, and I was attending meetings, but no step work. And today I know that having a sponsor and going to meetings and not working the steps is like painting over rust. It looks good on the outside, but underneath you still have rust. I decided to leave program after 3 months of success weight loss. I thought I could do the job by myself, and I was on my way. I had left program. And 1 month after leaving program, I picked up something that was not on my food plan, and that one thing took me out for a four-year binge. And that was a lot of pain and a lot of weight gain and a lot of brokenness. So I always say my last bottom got me to, my first bottom got me to OA, and my last bottom got me to God. Because that's when I took the program, I took the action to come into program back in 2004. My last day was July 9th, 2010 was my last day of my binge. I remember going to work that morning. My binge consisted of 16 flour and sugar products with two salads in there somewhere. You see, I would tell myself a lie, those two salads, it wasn't that bad. I would believe the lie, and the lie would become my truth. And that was my story, my ongoing story for so many years of overeating. I would always believe the truth. I'd always believe the lie and then run smack into the truth. I remember that morning, July 9th, I remember having to be at work at 5 in the morning, time to make the donuts. Yes, my place of employment was in the bakery department, a job that I kept for 27 years. On July 9th, that morning, I remember driving to work, hitting two binge places before arriving at work, and then hitting the vending machine upstairs in the break room to have my stash all day long, my all-day-long stash in my pockets. I finished work that day, and I worked, I worked from 5 to 1:30 that day, and I just remember driving home, hitting two more fast food places on the way home, and saying to myself, Terry, you're eating without your permission. You don't really want to do this. I remember I bursted out into tears because I knew, like, I didn't want to live this way. And there were so many mornings that I get up and not just wanting to live. I would show up and not really present for my job or for others. And I remember driving home that day and just bawling like a baby and saying to myself, "You are now eating without your permission, and you are killing yourself." And I cried all the way home, and I pulled over to the side of the road, and I just cried out to God. I said, "God, I can't do this anymore. I'm killing myself. I need your help." And that was the day. That was the day of my new journey. I put down the food July 9th, 2010, and I went to I went back to OA that next day. I found a sponsor that had experience with the book, the big book, and we were on our way. I had one day of abstinence, and I began to do the work. So now I just want to share, and I'd like to just share, you know, before I get into 10, 11, and 12, you know, some of my journey on the first 9 steps, you know, how it began for me. We opened the book, and the sponsor, you know, she took me through the set-aside prayer, which is such a beautiful prayer, and she said, you know, Terry, it's about setting aside everything that you think you know. And that set-aside prayer, you know, opened me up to a new world. You know, the set-aside prayer is just, God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, the 12 steps, the big book, my disease, and you, God, so that I may have an open mind, an open heart, and a new experience with all these things. Please let me see the truth. And that was the beginning of opening the book. And we began to go through, you know, the prefix, the first promise of the book, the title page, and then the prefix, and then the forwards, and then into the doctor's opinion we went. You know, step one for me was looking at the craving of the body, the obsession of the mind, and I came to the arrival that I had no mental defense, that I had committed the most insane act while cold stone abstinent in 2000 when I picked up that one thing that was not on my food plan. And the question for me was, did I need this power or did I have this power to continue to not eat? And I knew from that the answer was I did not have the power. And I had to look at the unmanageability in my life, you know, my spiritual malady, my being untreated for those 3 months while the food was down, which was going on long before I even, you know, my problem was even treated. So I knew, like, I was powerless over food because I had tried it so many years, 27 years being in the bakery department and 20 of those years binging, you know. Step two for me was just my need for this power, which for me was never a problem. You know, I came into the program agnostic. You know, I always believed there was a God, but I just didn't know that God. And I, you know, the sponsor just told me I just had to come up with a concept that worked for me. You know, that I had to really start believing that this God could also help me with putting down the food and keeping the food down. You know, on page 55, you know, it said that I would find this great reality deep down within, and that was a new idea for me because I had always, you know, always thought I had to really get good to go to God, and you know, the sponsor said, Terry, you don't have to get good to go to God, you just have to go. And I could do that. I could have the willingness to believe that there was, you know, this power that wanted to help me to live this life that I had never known before. And you know, and she had pointed out, you know, lack of power is my dilemma. So with this power, maybe no dilemma. And I could wrap my head around that. You know, we moved into step three, and I'd come up against, was I convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success? And I knew that it wasn't, and it couldn't be a success because I had tried so many years of trying to do it on my own. And this was, you know, for me, this was the first requirement. And did I meet this requirement before I made the decision to have this relationship with this power? And I needed to make the decision to take the step to experience this power that I could not even comprehend, only experience. And I knew, like, I was so ready at the time because I knew that I wanted to live differently. I just knew, and I was willing to believe whatever I needed to do to do the rest of the steps. You know, taking this third step was that commitment, spiritual agreement to God to take the rest of the steps and doing 4 through 9 and living in 10, 11, and 12. So we took the third step together, and you know, it was an incredible prayer. You know, I had no idea what this prayer was about, you know, about to do for me. You know, step three was, you know, an active prayer for me. It was the first time that, you know, active communication with God, and I had no idea what this prayer was going to do for me. I immediately began step four. Step four says to be faced and to be rid of the things that were blocking me from this power that I needed. The book also introduced me to this problem, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't for me the first time I saw that it wasn't about the food and the weight. You know, it told me that it was only a symptom, and that my troubles were my own making, and that selfish self-centeredness was the root of my troubles. So I began to write the three inventories, resentment, fear, and sex, all the manifestations of self that are run on self-will when I'm separated from everything and everyone. And I get to see where self-reliance failed me over and over and over again. And I begin to see the patterns of my selfishness and my self-centeredness throughout my inventory. You know, it took me, I had 3 weeks to do my inventory. I had done a sex ideal at the end of the sex inventory, which I had never experienced. I had a lot of problems with relationships, and I never understood why I had problems with relationships, and it was because I didn't have a sex ideal. I had nothing to live up to, and that sex ideal, you know, I created that, and you know, with the help of God, and you know, I have that sex ideal today, and it's been a great aspect of my life. It's changed my life. I took a fifth step with that sponsor. You know, I started to disconnect from ego and begin to have a spiritual experience. You know, step six, you know, the step six was about me letting go, and step seven was me letting God. I started to connect with God. Why did I start to connect with God was a lot of those things that were blocking me, you know, God removed from me in steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. I began to feel the nearness of my Creator, and the fifth step promises were really happening for me. I just could not believe this process after I had read my steps, you know, read my fifth step to my sponsor. You know, step eight, you know, I went immediately into, you know, I did 4, 5, 6, and 7 in one day. Step eight was, you know, I made my list from step four. Step nine was, you know, I started to go out to make my amends with the help of a guide. This was the stuff that I really felt the oneness with my with his power. And any time, you know, that I would say no, my sponsor pointed out that I was shutting myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And I have had lots of great amends story. And, you know, I like to just kind of share some of those because, you know, it's really where I get to see the presence of God. You know, that sponsor, I'm so grateful for sponsorship, I have to say that, with good guidance. And she had a lot of experience with nine. And, you know, some of the things in my ninth step amends were, you know, I had a lot of financial amends. You know, you figure 20 years of, you know, being in the bakery department and, eating food that, you know, wasn't paid for, and, you know, just helping myself from, you know, the time I went into work to the time I left. And so a lot of financial amends. And at the time I was still into myself and really being self-centered, and, you know, I would go to work, you know, still going to work and, you know, buying coffees and, you know, getting my nails done. And she pointed out to me, she said, "Terry, you know, you have financial amends." And I just, you know, I would always say, "Well, I don't, you know, I don't have enough money, you know." And she said, "Well, if you She said, if you have money to buy coffee, you have money to make your amends. And she said, I want you to start getting envelopes together, you know, and marking those envelopes and putting money in those envelopes every week when you get paid. And I was also getting my nails done, and she would say, Terry, if you're getting your nails done, then you have money to make your amends. So off came the nails. She said, what are you willing to do to have, you know, what are you willing to give up to have a relationship with God? And I knew, like, this was not about me anymore. This was about moving away from self and moving closer to God. And I began to make my financial amends. And, you know, I also, at the time, I had a motorcycle. And, you know, that sponsor, she was very, like, nine-step sponsor. Like, she was not going to listen to anything that I had to say. And, you know, she said, Terry, if you have a motorcycle, you know, and you have money to put gas in that motorcycle, she said, you have money to make your financial amends. So, you know, I said, okay. And I ended up selling that motorcycle so that I could have more money to make my amends. And she kept saying, what are you willing to give up to have a relationship with God? And the last of that I like to share, because this is really where my sex ideal came into play with my nine-step amends. I had sold just about everything that I could think of, and I was really making great headway with my financial amends. And I was living in a one-bedroom apartment at the time, and I didn't really know what more to do. And I called her up one day because I was doing prayer meditation, and this thought came to me that, you know, if I was to find, you know, a little old lady that I could live with, you know, and just rent a room, that I could still, you know, I'd save a lot of money and be able to make, you know, more financial amends. And so I bumped into a person in the fellowship, and he was a great community, you know, a great part of the community, and did a lot of work in the community. And I'd asked, you know, if he knew of anybody that, or anybody that was looking for a roommate. You know, I was particularly looking for just a little old lady that wanted to have companionship, not to be taken care of, but just to have companionship and to rent out a room. And a month later, you know, I bumped into this person, and he said, I haven't found the little old lady that you're looking for, but I have a room that you can rent. And he said, my daughter just moved out, and, you know, I'm willing to rent it out, and I'd like to offer it to you first. And so I talked it out, and I prayed about it, and, you know, I talked it with my sponsor, and I ended up renting the room. So I was able to save, you know, this big chunk of money a month. And it was such a great experience for me. And I began to continue to be able to save money and continue to make my financial amends. I had no idea what God's plan was for me. I actually picked up a second job so that I could continue with my financial amends. And through this process, I had no idea what God's plan was. You know, step nine, you know, I made my amends. I finally finished my amends. And I got to see, you know, this power, which brought me into this new dimension with, because I had, you know, I had so much fear. And I've learned that, you know, 4 and 9 is where, you know, where we usually balk. And, you know, 9 is the step that will always take me back to the food if I don't continue to just do the process and clean up my past. Steps 1 through 9 were my launching pad into 10, 11, and 12. And I have to say, you know, to end my 9-step amends story, that person that I moved into with is now my husband. And, you know, I had no idea that, you know, God had a much bigger plan for me. I had no idea that, I said to myself, I would never get married again. And God had a much bigger plan. And, you know, and that was through the amends process. So steps 1 through 9 has been my launching pad into, you know, 10, 11, and 12. And, you know, I just like to go into 10 because that has been really, for me, where It's been such a beautiful, I just love all the steps, but 10, 11, and 12 has really been the crux of my program. So, you know, it says this thought brings us to step 10, so the thought is that, you know, they will always materialize if we work for them in step 9, and we continue to take personal inventory and set right any new mistakes as we go along. So this tells me, you know, it has the word continue in step 10 for 4 times. And, you know, I just know, like, it had never said in the book, you know, Terry, you're done. You know, you've done enough. And, you know, you can start resting on your laurels. This book gives me clear-cut direction on, you know, to continue to take personal inventory. And that has been really the gift for me, you know, to do, you know, a 10-step on a daily basis when needed, when they crop up. You know, it gives us clear-cut directions. You know, we ask God to remove them at once, you know, when selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear come up. You know, we discuss them with someone immediately. You know, we've learned to do that in step 5. We make amends quickly, which is steps 8 and 9, and then we resolutely turn, which is step 12, to our thought, you know, the thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance is our code. So I begin to see, like, step 10 for me is it brings me to the balance, and the balance is God, and I get to live in the fellowship of the Spirit. You know, I do 10-step inventory all throughout the day. You know, I have a support network that I use that I can text or call at any time. And, you know, the code word for me when I have a 10-step is, you know, I'll text somebody and say I have an immediate, because it says, and, you know, in step 10, it says we immediately discuss this with someone. And so when I send that immediate, you know, that support system knows exactly what I'm looking for, and that's to do a step 10. You know, the promises in step 10, you know, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, in our case, food. You know, for this time, sanity will have returned. So I'm now restored. I'm restored to sanity. You know, we will seldom be interested in liquor. And I love that line because it doesn't say we will never be interested in liquor. It says the thoughts will seldom be interested in liquor, which is, in our case, food. If we are tempted, we recoil from it, from a hot flame. So, you know, I had that experience, you know, 20 years in the bakery department, and, you know, the last 10 years out of it. And so I know, like, we can go anywhere as long as we're spiritually fit, and I am recovered, and the food does not call to me today, and I'm so grateful for that. Step 10, you know, also tells me that, you know, it's easy to let up on my spiritual program of action, to rest on my laurels. You know, and this is a warning for me, you know, because I'm headed for trouble if I do, you know, it's continue. I get a daily reprieve, you know, living in 10, 11, and 12, and I have to have this daily reprieve for me, you know, because if I start resting on my laurels, then I'm going backwards. And, you know, it says every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. You know, how can I best serve thee? So this is about moving away from self and, you know, really getting away from self and taking cleaning up. I call this step the growth step. And it's such a beautiful step. Step 11 for me, this is, I love this step, and I've shared this step quite a bit. There's no wrong way to do step 11. You know, I have found the only wrong way is not to do it. I was taught early on to set myself a timer to start out with 3 minutes. You know, step 11 is all about prayer and meditation, and I kind of like to just share with some of the things that I do in step 11. There's so many beautiful prayers in here. You know, there's like four prayers in here that tell me exactly what to do in step 11. And some of the things that I do, you know, I do this, the nightly review, the evening review, and share it with another recovered compulsive eater the next day. And I've done that for the last 3 years, faithfully. In the morning, I start out with a third, the seventh step and the ninth step spouse prayer, and on awakening prayer, I start with that before I go into meditation. I do a half an hour meditation, just sitting. I pay attention to any intuitive thoughts, and I follow through with them. So that might look like, you know, if a name comes up in meditation, or just something that's not my thoughts. I really pay attention to that, and I call those are the God thoughts. They're not mine. The things that I do throughout the day for conscious contact with God, is I do the prayers, you know, throughout the day. You know, it might look like the Serenity Prayer, the third step. And there's some great prayers in here. You know, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially from, that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. We also ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision, relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. So I don't have to struggle all day long if I'm staying connected. Some of the other things that I do, other than prayer throughout the day, I have a chime on my watch that goes off every hour. That's my reminder to check in with God. And I love this one that I do all throughout the day. It's every doorway I walk through, I give God a smile or a kind word. There's not anywhere that you can't go and find a doorway. And every incoming phone call, I invite God in before I pick up the phone. And a couple other things that I've added, because it always changes, every red light that I come to, I connect with God and just, you know, get connected and just say, you know, some kind words or a thank you. Or, and the other thing that I've added is, you know, if I see a red car on the road, that's my sign to check in with God, too. I also pray with others. You know, I read some outside literature. My husband and I, we do a daily prayer together and some inspirational readings before we start our day. And that's, you know, that has really been the crux of step 11 for me. You know, I don't do this, you know, I don't do step 11 perfectly, but, it's become part of who I am today, and I just know I have a much better day when I'm connected to God, and I take the time to go into prayer meditation. And, you know, I've had a lot of spiritual teachers along the way, and one spiritual teacher, she said, you know, if you're not making time for prayer meditation, it's just because it's not that you don't have time, it's because you're not making it a priority, and that has really, really stuck with me along my journey. Step 12, having had a spiritual result, spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. You know, we try to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And my experience with step 12 is, as I awaken to this presence of God, this presence of God that has so much love for me, my life has become filled with purpose and meaning, and it's really staying in God's grace. You know, for me, it's like an alarm clock going off in the morning. You know, the alarm clock will wake me up, but unless I take the steps, I will fall right back to sleep. And so I need to take the steps to get up and wake up with God. And I get to pass on this gift. You know, step 12, you know, says you can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is the experience you must not miss. And step 12 for me is continuing to do, 1 through 11 and passing on this gift that was so freely given to me. And I'm so grateful that I get to do this one day at a time, and, you know, to be able to help others. And it's not up to me in the outcome, and that has been my experience. I get to show up and let God do the work. And it's been a blessing to be on this journey, and to be able to share. You know, this living in 10, 11, and 12 has made the hugest difference for me in my life. And I'm so grateful that I have all my support system out there, and that I get to, just pick up the phone, and if I'm full of fear or resentment, that I can talk about that and get it out of my head and go about my day and to help others, because I want to stay unblocked from God, because it's not about me today. It's about just being of maximum service to God and to others. And with that, I believe that's it, Leah. Thanks for letting me share. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Terry, for your presentation this morning. We will offer contact information at the conclusion of this recording. And now we're going to open the floor for any question and answer questions, actually, that you may have for Terry. And you can do so by pressing star 1 to unmute.
This is Sarah. May I ask a question?
Yes, please go ahead with your question.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you, Leah. Thank you for your service. Good morning, Terry. So good to hear you on the line. You did a beautiful job. I just loved hearing it. I had a question as far as how you deal with people, since we're talking about sponsorship also with a 12-step, how you deal with people that are struggling, slipping and sliding. Do you let them go? Do you bring them back through? Do you have a certain method in which you offer support and God's good orderly direction in that sense? Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah, for the question. It's a great question. For me, I kind of hang in there with them for a little bit, not forever, because I always take them back to what has it been truth. I do the red light, yellow light, and green light, and see where they are with that. I give them a couple chances, and then if they continue to pick up the food, it just tells me that they're not ready. And it's kind of funny because it's not funny, but I just had this experience, and it's funny that we're talking about it. I just had this experience with a woman that I had been working with for about 3 months, and she picked up the food. She was at a wedding, and she decided to pick up the food, and she was actually moving into step 4, and I had the conversation with her, and I told her to take it into prayer meditation to see if she was really ready, and that we would start, we would go over the doctor's opinion if she wanted to continue to do the work. And it was 3 days later she called, and because she had, I told her she might not be done, and that it wasn't up to me. It wasn't between me and her. It was between her and God. And we had done steps 1, 2, and 3, so she knew. She was definitely a compulsive overeater. We had figured that out, but it was really about her willingness to surrender. And to really say that she was powerless, it really had to go from her head to her heart. And, she called me 3 days later and said that she was ready and willing. So we went back over to the doctor's opinion, and then, I hit a couple points in step 1 for her, and, asked her if she was ready. And she's doing, she took the 3rd step again, and we're in 4 again. So I hope that answers your question.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Sarah, for the question. Who's next?
Anne Marie.
It's Helen.
Anne Marie, please, and then Helen. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Leah, for your service, and thanks, Terry, for sharing all that you did. You said that, and I heard that you said in step 11, if a thought comes to mind, if it's an intuitive thought, then you really focus on that. And my question is, how do you know if it's an intuitive thought or if it's just one of your thoughts? The reason why I ask is because when I meditate, I often start thinking about different things, and I don't think they're intuitive. I don't think they're from God. So I don't know, maybe you don't have that problem, but how do you know it's an intuitive thought and to really focus on that? Thanks.
Well, thanks for the question. I can totally identify with you. I know there's times when I'm in meditation, and I share this quite often, that sometimes when I'm in meditation and, it's really about focusing on breath, you know, coming back to breath. And I've learned in meditation that sometimes the reason that I didn't do it in the past was because I thought I could stop my mind, you know, from thinking. And that's part of the process, that I have no control over my mind, that, you know, so when I'm in meditation, sometimes it looks like, you know, I'll be sitting there and I'll be saying, where am I going to put my Christmas tree? Or, you know, what do I need to do today? I mean, my mind's going everywhere. And what I've been taught is when that happens, is to say to that thought, thanks for sharing, and then come back to breath. And it's been really helpful. So how I know that's an intuitive thought is like when I'm really focusing on breath and something comes up, like maybe a name or a person, a name of a person that I haven't talked to for a while, or just something that I just know, like intuitively, I know that sixth sense that they talk about in step 10, like I know like it's not my thought, because my MO is not to think of others or not to be God, you know, God thinking, you know, thinking on God's line. So it's really about those thoughts of calling somebody that I haven't seen or heard from in years, you know, I know that's not my thought. So that's when after I come out of meditation, I write down those things that I didn't think of, you know, and that God gave to me in the meditation. And it's quite beautiful. It's quite beautiful, especially when I've acted on them. Like I've had so many people, like I might just throw a text and just say, thinking of you today. And that's it, with no expectations of a return response. And I've had so many people come back and say, you know, that text came in at the perfect time. I had been struggling with this or that. And so those are some of the benefits that you get when you intuitively just act on what weren't your thoughts in step 11 in the meditation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne-Marie, for the question. Now, Helen, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Leah. Thank you, Terry, for this amazing share. You mentioned the set-aside prayer. Where do you get that? Where did you get that prayer?
That was a prayer that was passed on to me. Not really sure where it came from. This woman that I had sponsored, she came from Colorado, and it's one of the things that they do in Colorado, the set-aside prayer. And when she gave me the prayer, there's six different places in the big book that it's all about setting aside my ideas, old ideas, setting aside prejudice, setting aside my belief system. And she took me through those six places in the book so that I could come into this new journey with her, not knowing anything, you know. And it was such an opening to a new way of my journey through the last 10 years of my recovery.
Is there some way you could send that to me or something?
Sure.
Okay, how do we do that?
And we'll get that contact information at the conclusion of the recording.
Great.
Thank you, Helen, for your question.
Thank you.
Anyone else with a question for Terry this morning?
I have a question.
Maya?
Judith?
I hear
Mary?
Judith, and there was someone prior to Judith?
Mary?
Mary. Okay, let's start with Mary and then Judith, please.
Hi, thank you. I'm just beginning my 10th step. I've been working on it for a while, and it often goes, you know, it's pretty smooth. I can clean stuff up throughout the day. And I'm wondering if you can comment on this. Other people might have it also. That occasionally I'll have a day where lots of stuff comes up, and it just feels constant, and it feels really challenging to clean it up with other people immediately, to call people. I'm working on building my fellowship. How do you handle when stuff comes up in the evening, you know, late, when you might not be able to call people or when you might not have access to a phone? Do you always do a 10th step with other OA fellows or could it be others? Or I guess just how do you handle if there a lot of stuff comes up or if you don't have access to connecting with other OA fellows? Thank you.
My experience with that, if I don't have, if I'm not doing 10 step, there is going to be a lot of stuff that comes up in my 11. I do a nightly review where if anything that I haven't taken care of during the day, that's when the rest of it comes up in step 11, and I'm able to turn that over to another recovered compulsive overeater in the morning. So as I do that all day long, and that's what it is, like if I'm cleaning up all day long, that I'm not going to have a lot of stuff come up. But if I'm not cleaning up, that's when I'm going to start getting into trouble. Right? So for me, it's mandatory that I clean that up ASAP, because if I have too much in my head, I'm going to start getting into trouble. So if I have an immediate, I just pick up the phone or I text somebody and say I have an immediate. And I have a good support system with probably, 10 to 15 women that I just text and say I have an immediate. And I go right down until someone, says, I'm available. And then I pick up the phone and I talk it out. Or if it's been a while and I haven't heard from anyone, I'll write out the fears or the resentment. So that at least I'm getting it out of my head, and then when someone's available, I can actually share that inventory with that person.
Can I ask one more question about that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you try to have it? My habit has been to write it out before I call people. Do you try to write it out before you call people, or what do you think is necessary for that?
Well, I think it's all different. I think everyone might do a little bit different. For me, I know if it's in my head, I want to get it out. So I don't write it out if I can get a hold of somebody. But if I can't get a hold of somebody, it's been a little bit because we all have lives and we all work. If I can't get a hold of somebody right off, then I'll write it out. So at least it's getting out of my head on the paper, and then I'll share it.
Thank you very much. That was very helpful.
Thank you, Mary. Judith, please.
Hi, Terry. This is Judith, recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Thank you very, very much for your share. I hope I can get this out clearly and succinctly. I think I have an idea that it's important for me to ask my higher power to be with me around step 10. I've just started getting into that work, and when resentments come up, as they do regularly, I am now able to text or call someone in program, share it, let it go, and get a better grip for next time so that I'm not continuing the cycle. One thing that keeps coming up in my mind is this really cleaning house if I don't do as I did in step 9 and make amends with a particular person? For instance, just quickly, if I have some distress or resentment with one of my adult children, I will write about it, talk about it, let it go. And yet it seems like it's still stuck, because I haven't made the direct amends to the person. I think I might be missing something in step 10. So I'm not sure if I'm being clear, but if there's any clarity you can give on the step 10 process in terms of the trigger of the person who the resentment is for. Thank you for hearing me.
Great question. Thank you for the question. For me, if I'm bumping out my inventory with someone and I still, I'm still having, because I haven't cleaned up, I mean, it gives us clear-cut directions in step 10. We discuss it with somebody immediately, which would be, my 10-step buddy, and I make amends quickly, if I've harmed someone. So when I do the 10-step, I walk it right through. So I'll do, do my inventory. I'll talk out my inventory. I'll talk about the defects that came out of that inventory with my 10-step friends. I talk about the defects that come up. I take the 7-step prayer after that. So it's kind of a process for me. It's not a long process, but it's a quick process. But I walk it right through. So I'll do the 7-step prayer. The 8-step, is asked, do I Do I need to make any amends, or is there a living amends that I can continue to do? You know, 8 and 9, 10, you know, do I feel like this inventory is complete? And, you know, I always say yes because I've done the work, it's thorough. And step 11, you know, I take it into step 11, I just thank God, you know, for this inventory and this process that I can, you know, be clear and unblocked. And then step 12, I turn myself, you know, I turn to another person, not necessarily the people in the program, but outside the program too. You know, how can I be of help today? You know, who can I be of service to? And so I walk it right through. So it sounds like maybe the amends process is where you're stuck. I don't know if that was if that was helpful or not, but
yeah.
Thank you, Judith, for the question.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else this morning with a question for Terry? Star one to unmute.
Suji.
Go ahead, Suji.
Hello, everybody, and I'm so glad to be with you. And I think I have a big question, and I'll just preface it that my dear 92-year-old second mother just passed away. And I am recovered in Greater Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and very grateful. And my question is, how does your spiritual life in steps 10, 11, and 12 help you to deal with life matters of birth, death, or loss? And I pass.
Thanks for the question, Sue. That's a great question. And for me, you know, this journey has been, you know, it's been a journey of ups and downs. And, I've had a mother that passed away in my recovery 3 years ago. I have three children, and my middle son, you know, he was 26 at the time. And he went up, he was diving into this ocean, and he went up on a cliff to dive off it. And on this cliff, they have a 50-foot, you know, a 65-foot and a 75-foot. And usually the kids aren't even supposed to be up there jumping off the cliff, but they do. And my son went up for the first time and went up on the 65-foot cliff and jumped off. And not knowing that, you know, it was, you know, you weren't supposed to be up there. But when he asked the kids on the 50-foot ledge, you know, how to get down, they had already jumped. So he figured he could make it. And he jumped off that cliff, and he never hit the water. And that was some of the life stuff. He broke every single bone in his body. He shattered his feet. Thank God he's alive today. But those were some of the things that really 10 and 11 helped me with, because I had so much, not so much resentment, but I had so much fear going on at the time. And thank God for sponsorship, because, you know, my sponsor kept saying, you know, Terry, you know, this is not about you. Do not make this about you. You know, you have a support system. Lean harder into God, and lean into the fellowship. And that's what I did. You know, I leaned harder into the fellowship. And I always say, Sue, we always say, you know, God doesn't give us more than we can handle. But I say, you know, God doesn't give us more than we can handle. Sometimes life gives us more than we can handle. That's why we need God. So I get to go through these life situations, with God's help, because I, on my own power, I'm so grateful that we have a solution, you know, that we can go to 10 and 11, you know, and continue to do 12, and that's, you know, with others outside the fellowship too. So I've gone through a lot of life situations, and I just leaned harder into God with those life situations. And my relationship has, you know, it's been, I don't know, it's been more stronger, you know, because I've had to lean more into God with those life situations.
Thank you, Susie, Hello. For the question. Anyone
Thanks.
Else? Star one to unmute.
This is Marcella. Can I ask a question?
Of course, Marcella. Go ahead.
Thank you, Terry. It was great to hear you. Just awesome to be here in the company of some of my sponsees. And I was going to ask a question. How all these wonderful and very obvious spiritual fitness that you have talked about. How does it reflect in your relationship with your food and in your weight and your size and your shape? Thank you.
I had a hard time hearing that question. I don't know if you can repeat it or if someone can help me out with that.
I believe she wanted clarity regarding, you know, how has the step work affected your weight?
Okay. Yes. You know, I didn't talk much about my weight. You know, I came into program that, you know, 2004, I came in at 250 pounds. You know, I, through the process and through, you know, having a food plan that works for me and weighing and measuring, you know, I've been able to release 125 pounds and stay at a healthy body weight for the last 9 years. It's been by the grace of God. I continue to weigh and measure today. My food plan has not really changed. I went to a nutritionist to have that food plan, you know, made up for me. I do some exercise, lifting weights that she had to increase some of my food intake, which was, adjusted to what I was doing for physical exercise. It's been a beautiful journey. It's not been, you know, today I get to live in between, you know, I get to live life in between meals. You know, the food is not a problem. You know, I turn my food over on a daily basis to another compulsive eater to keep me honest, because I know for me, I'm really dishonest around food, and that's, for me, I have to weigh and measure, and there's no wiggle room for me because I'm dishonest. It's like if you tell me I can have one apple, I'm going to go to Whole Foods and find the biggest apple. So, you know, the scale really helps me to stay honest, and it's not that I rely on the scale, it's I rely on God to help me to stay honest today, and the scale helps me to stay honest. So that has been my experience.
Thank you, Marcella, for that question. Thanks, Terry, for clarifying all that. Anyone else? Questions this morning?
Leah, may I double dip?
Go ahead, please.
Thank you. This is Sarah. Terry, just one other question. When you do a 10-step with somebody, how much feedback do you normally give, and is that just dependent on situation? You know, I find myself, I always ask if people want, you know, not to just blurt out, you know, what I think, but oftentimes it helps me to hear feedback, so I'm just wondering what your take on that is. Thank you.
Well, for me, I'm always open for feedback because I can see the truth. You know, I can see the truth when I'm talking it out or if I've written it out. But I'm always open to feedback. And for me, when someone's 10-stepping with me, you know, if I see more truth in what their inventory is or what they're sharing, I will always, you know, ask them, you know, can we go back to selfishness? Can you see any more selfishness in that resentment? You know, and I'll take them right through again so that they get to see a little bit more deeper truth in the resentment than what they had on paper or, you know, just by talking it out. Because for me, when you've done this work, it's like it's so clear. Like it's more, sometimes it's more clear to someone else than it is when you're doing it. So that's when I bring them back. I'll say, you know, can we get a little bit deeper here in the selfishness or the dishonesty? You know, what was the lie you told yourself in this resentment? And it's been a really good process because you really get down deep, and it's good. And I want, you know, when I 10-step, I want the same, you know, I want the same thing. I'm always open for feedback because I want to see more truth.
Thank you, Sarah, for the question. Anyone else?
Maura Z,
your turn.
Thank you, Leah, for your service. Thank you, Terry. I so enjoyed hearing you this morning. I have a question about your 10-step turnaround. I have done them in the past. I'm a bit of a structure fiend, and I was just wondering, do you have a set of particular questions that you ask someone who's doing the 10-step turnaround?
I do. Like, in the inventory, yes, I do. When I'm hearing someone's 10-step, I'll take them right through from 10 to 12. Not everybody does that, but I do that because it's like, for me, my experience has been sometimes when I haven't done it in the past, I still have those feelings come up. So it tells me something is not, I haven't cleaned something up. So by doing 10, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, you know, and walking through that process, it really helps me to not have to go back to that resentment or fear. So I do have questions that I take them right through, and I pass those on.
Thank you, Morizzi. Anyone else?
I'm sorry, I thought I was still unmuted. I was wanting to know, if I may, Leah.
Yes.
I wanted to know, do you have those questions written down? Is there a sheet you have, or are you just simply going from the book?
I have those questions written down.
And so I'm hoping at the end of this this share, then if I contact you, I could perhaps get those from you?
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you, Terry. Thank you again for your share.
You're welcome, Maura.
Thank you, Maura Z. Anyone else?
This is Elaine.
Elaine, your turn.
Hi, Terry. Thank you so much for your awesome share and service. My question is, as you begin to bring a sponsee into Step 12, working with others, what are some of the most important things that you feel they need to know or do as they begin to do this work? I know it's often very uncomfortable for people to get started. Thank you.
Well, my experience with that is I've had a lot of experience with sponsorship, and I think as you continue the journey with others, you know, you learn what works and what doesn't work. And for me, I have a sponsee ideal, which, you know, it's everything that, you know, I give them the sponsee ideal, and the sponsee ideal is everything that I'm willing to do to help them and everything that I'm not willing to do. You know, like, I'm not going to be the banker. I'm not going to be hanging out with you, you know. So it's kind of an explanation of exactly what I do and, you know, what we're going to do. Like, I have some things, like, that I ask them to show up with, you know, a clean big book, you know, a highlighter. And if I give assignments, you know, I ask that those assignments are completed. We don't meet if they're not. So there's some clear-cut suggestions and directions that I give them before we even start the work. And I will read that sponsorship ideal to them, and I have them go back home and take it into prayer meditation, because not everyone's willing to do the things. And it's really about, are you willing to go to any lengths, you know, through this process? And in step three, when we get to step three, you know, it talks about, in page 58 at the bottom, Bruce disclosed in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, then you're ready for certain steps. So when we get to that point, I have them actually sign that, and because it's a commitment that they are willing to go to any length, and it's like three other places in the book that, you know, so when they start balking in four, I always take them back to page 58. So that's in my sponsor ideal, that there'll be clear-cut directions, and not everybody wants to do it. So, and I always tell them that, you know, if I'm here to show up and, you know, be a conduit to God, and it's not really between me and them. It's about, my job is to, you know, take them on this journey to get, you know, to form this relationship with God through the steps. And, you know, not everybody's willing and ready to do that. So I just tell them if they're not ready to use me as a support system, you know, when they are ready and they want to do the work, to call me again. So I'm really clear on what my role is as a sp- sponsor.
Thank you, Elaine. Anyone else? Star one to unmute. Going once. Twice. And it appears all lines are clear. Oh, did I hear somebody pop up with a question? Okay, perhaps not. Terry, thank you so much for your service this morning. Been so informative and insightful. Thank you very much. And, of course, contact information will be available at the conclusion of this recording. Thank you to all who asked questions, Sarah W., Anne Marie, Helen, Mary, Judith, Sue G., Marcella, Mara, and Elaine. And I'll close the meeting in the way we always close our meetings here on A Vision for You. And that is from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.